This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. Joining me, as usual, by phone, remotely, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz.
Good morning, Wally. How are you?
Good. Also joining us this morning, former Toronto Maple Leaf, Washington Capital, and a few other stops in between, sweet Lou Franceschetti. How are you doing this morning, Lou?
Morning, Wally. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good. Fantastic. Naz, your thoughts? Another week. We keep going. How are you holding up?
Holding up okay, Wally. Holding up okay. Just hope everybody else is holding up well, too.
Lou?
How's it going, Louie?
You know what, Wally? This thing is a silver lining to some of us old athletes watching ourselves play in all these games that are actually rebroadcasted on a couple of stations here.
I got to ask you, Lou. Have there been any on any of the old shows that have featured you in any of them?
Yeah, I was watching the. I stayed up a little late last night, and the game is on again today around 3 o'clock. The 1987 game against the New York Islanders, where we went seven periods.
Oh, that was the longest overtime game in history. Am I getting that right?
I think it was recently beaten, but I'd say it's in the top five.
Yeah, I remember there was the old one back in the 30s with I think the Montreal Maroons were in it, and that had held up for a long time. Is that the game that Pat LaFontaine scored the winning goal?
Yep.
Yeah, and
we outshot him 74-50. And just watching the game and looking at the highlights and the chances that we had and the chances that they had to put us away. You know what? It's an unbelievable feeling, because as good as the kids are nowadays and as fast as the game is now, the game was just as good. A lot tougher, a lot more physical, a lot more. What can you say? It's a little bit more like you have to be prepared in the game, not like some kids are today. But it brought back a lot of good memories.
Got to ask you, is that game on again this afternoon?
What's that, Wally?
Are they replaying it again? I think you mentioned it's on again this afternoon.
Yeah, they're replaying again, I think, at 3 o'clock on Sportsnet. And okay, I just want to let you know, don't have a heart attack when I have a breakaway with 12 seconds left. And
Thomas Johnson takes my feet away from me.
Yeah, you slid pretty far on that play, dude.
Lou, thanks for tipping me off. I definitely got to watch, because I've long since forgotten. I know we've been listening to you for years tell us how great of a hockey player. Now there's firsthand evidence on TV this afternoon. So, you were number 15, if I recall correctly, were you not?
Yes, I was.
Okay, we'll certainly be watching that. Just to let our listeners know, COVID-19 is a terrible thing, but in some sense, it's been good for the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We've been on a little bit of a roll lately. Seems like a lot of people have some time on their hands, so our interview list has been phenomenal lately. Peter Mansbridge, Dave Keon, Brad Park, Dick Pound, Steve Simmons, Stephen Brunt. And today, another legend, I think he's a friend of yours, Lou, John Shannon. John Shannon, certainly one of the greats in the Canadian sports broadcasting field, has done literally everything in the sports arena, executive producer of Hockey Night in Canada, was there when they launched the Leafs Network, of course, had spent quite a bit of time in the recent past watching him on Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan. He's a consummate storyteller, so We'll have John Shannon on right after the first break, and we'll have him on for most of the show. We've got a lot of material we want to go through with him on his Twitter page. It doesn't have his resume, and there's nobody with a resume like John Shannon. It just says hockey storyteller. So we're going to look forward to that.
He's probably got a lot of them living in Edmonton all those years, too.
Yeah, so look, I think he may have some Lou Franceschetti stories, too. We're going to have to ask him.
You'll have those for sure, Wally.
Hey, man, take it easy, okay? There was no social media back then.
I just, you know what? I would just watch the Leafs play Montreal in Game 6 on Sportsnet, an hour of it. And Dave,
did you watch that last night?
Dave Keon checked John Beliveau into the ice that game.
Well, they used to, you know, Dave Keon was the, they called him the ultimate hab killer. I think we interviewed, I remember the first time we had Dave on, we were doing the tribute show, and we had Scotty Bowman, and we asked Scotty Bowman what he thought about Dave Keon. And he said, one of the great players ever. The only thing about Dave Keon, the only thing wrong with Dave Keon was he should have been in a Habs uniform coming from Quebec.
Yeah.
There, you know, Keon in the early 60s was, he was the guy you wanted in every single situation on the ice. Certainly.
Well, you know, it was funny watching the game last night, Wally, that Red Kelly did a pretty good job on Jean Beliveau, too.
Yeah, Red Kelly. I mean, those used to be the matchups. Kelly and Beliveau, Keon and Andre Richard, Keon and Beliveau, and Kelly and Andre Richard. Punch used to mix it up quite a bit. And getting the opportunity to watch some of those games again with all this time we have on our hands is certainly, I wouldn't call it a privilege. I'm sure we'd all love to be doing something else right now, but got to take advantage. Health-wise, Lou, how are you holding up?
As best I can. It's just one of these things that you try to do something for a couple hours a day, and then you come back home and, I think probably this is the most clean and sanitized place I've had for a while, because there's really not much else to do except for either watch some TV shows or some old flicks, some old games that really back. And it's not just hockey. But you look at some of the NCAA games that I watched growing up, and it just brings back those moments where I was when I was watching them at that time. And obviously you got the NFL games. Now you got the NFL draft coming up. As well as I do, I'm a pretty knowledgeable college guy. So I'm watching and hearing on all the stuff that's going on, where everybody's going. And with having probably 6 or 7 prospects in the first round, Alabama's always at the top of the list.
Well, they're saying Alabama may have 6 in the first round, which will apparently tie the record Miami in 2004 at 6 in the first round. Naz, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Wally. Everything is going well. It's time. That's all. It's time. Everybody's got to be patient, and we'll get through this.
Yeah, I just, people ask me how I'm doing. I said, my hair is growing longer. I may head back to my grade 13 hairstyle with hair down to my shoulders, if that's the way we're headed. I'm thinking of checking my closet to see if I have my white pants with the blue, purple bell-bottom stripes. Not so sure I'd fit into
70s,
them.
Retro 70s.
That was the early 70s. I remember I had these white pants with thick purple stripes with bell bottoms so wide that if you got a breeze, it would lift you off the ground.
How about
shoes? With the fur collar?
Yeah.
Does they make you a little bit taller, Wally?
It would be just make me about 5 inches taller, but the hair is growing longer, and it's not growing any blacker. It's certainly a lighter shade these days. I got to dig out some old grade 13 pictures and see that's what I'm going to look like in about a month or 2 months. Hair's getting pretty long. Anyways, on that note, guys, hang in there. We're going to go to break, and we're coming back from the break. We'll have the legend himself, John Shannon. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville introduced contact-free delivery. Order and prepay online and choose contact-free delivery. The driver will place your order on your doorstep in a nice, clear, protective bag. Then he'll politely stand back 2 metres and call the number on the receipt. Once you answer the door, he'll give you a little toodaloo and off he goes. Contact-free delivery from pizzaville.ca or the Pizzaville app.
Are you real ready? If you're a real estate agent, we can help you sell more homes. A business owner? We'll help show it off to the community at large. And if you're a homeowner, we'll supply accurate floor plans for every room in your home. Because selling property is all in the details. Real Tours Media, creators of 3D virtual tours, walkthrough video, HDR photography, logos, and brands. Check out the one-stop shop for successful real estate agents. RealToursMedia.ca.
With a little training, anyone can learn the security business while on duty at your home or company. It's unfortunate, but a lot of security companies are just not experienced enough to handle the complex dynamics of tactical security. And that little bit of training and experience can end up costing you a lot more than you bargained for. Peace of mind, trust, and honor is the foundation on which the Regal Security reputation is built. They're driven, they're respected, and they're unrivaled. They're everyday superheroes. Visit them online at regalsecurity.ca and find out how much they know, not how much they can learn.
To become a champion in business, it takes coaching, training, and bench strength. And every team needs a skilled player like KPMG Enterprise for private companies. KPMG Enterprise helps entrepreneurs and family businesses grow, strengthen, and transition by offering a full suite of services, including audit, accounting, tax, and advisory. Your business doesn't stand still. It evolves. Team up with a winner. Visit kpmg.ca/enterprise. Let's do this.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carley understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carley, the intelligent choice.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
From face-offs to playoffs, field goals to own goals, you're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on the new AM 740, also in Toronto on 96.7 FM and on the internet, live streaming, www.zoomerradio.com. He has seen it, he has done it, and he's been there when it comes to all things sports broadcasting. I'm talking about John Shannon. We're pleased to welcome the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, John Shannon himself. Good morning, John. How are you this morning?
Morning, Wally. How are you?
We're doing great. Thanks so much for joining us. First question we have to ask you, how are you doing?
Well, you know, the sun came up this morning, and my coffee is hot, and there's not much more I can do.
How are you keeping yourself busy?
What was that, sorry?
How are you keeping yourself busy?
Oh, you know what? I have two dogs that need lots of attention. I have a lovely wife that needs lots of attention, and it's starting to get a little warmer, so the backyard needs some attention. So we're doing okay. It's kind of like Groundhog Day around here every day, and you just have to get into a routine that's socially acceptable and quite quiet. I was joking with my wife the other day that this is the most time we spent since we started dating 32 years ago. So, she did sharpen the knives yesterday, but I'm not sure what that means.
Anyways, John, we're trying to go at it four guys on the phone at the same time. You had a remarkable career as a producer. We may lean upon your expertise to manage the flow here. It's not the easiest thing having a conversation with four people at the same time.
Well, anything with Francis Getty is a problem. I learned that. I tell you, I learned that a long time ago in Washington. Anything with Francis Getty is tough to manage. I don't know how his coaches ever survived it.
Lou, we will let you. I'm not going to defend your honor. I'll let you step up to the plate for yourself, Lou.
Hey, John, just remember, I tell everybody, I was there.
Oh my God, yeah. We got to listen to you again, Lou. Anyways, this is not the Lou Franceschetti show. It's the John Shannon show, and we appreciate the banter, and let's have a good time. John, you. I do have to ask you this question. You may find it a silly question, but we're on the other side of the aisle here. We're fans, and you had an incredible career. You know, it's still going, but you were, you know, executive producer of Hockey Night in Canada for so many years. You've produced sports in every realm: the Olympics, CFL football, PGA golf, NASL soccer, probably a whole bunch that I've missed. An incredible career. What does a producer actually do?
Oh, I always, you know, because we speak so much in the lexicon of hockey, I always tell people that a producer is a general manager, and the director in television is like the coach. So the producer is the planner. He's the one that in the long term and the short term decides the editorial flow and the concept of the program, and then along with the director, they execute the pictures and the storyline of the show, and add on top of that commentators that have to work in sync with the producer and the director. So in many ways, what a producer is the in television and television sports, at least, is the ringleader.
Anyways,
the one that decides almost everything, and there has to be somebody where the buck stops, and in television it stops with the producer.
John, before we move on to other topics, I'll turn it over to Nash shortly. You grew up in British Columbia. Went to school at in Ryerson, I believe, in the program there. We almost crossed paths. So I was supposed to be there at the same time you were. My career path took a different turn at that point. Growing up in British Columbia, and listened to some of your other interviews recently with Millard and with Siegel. Tell our listeners, no, you got the bug to get into sports broadcasting really, really early, and tell us. You literally wanted to get into the sports broadcasting business when you were 8 years old.
Yeah.
Tell us how you got from an 8-year-old Oliver.
It's funny. I grew up in a really small town near the Canada-U.S. border in the middle of BC in the Okanagan Valley, where if you didn't play sports, there wasn't much for you to do other than go to church. And I wasn't big at going to church, so we played every sport. Now the only downside to that, Wally, was that we didn't have a hockey arena, and on top of that, I couldn't skate. So we played every sport other than hockey. So the only foray I had into the game was in the Pacific time zone was Saturday night at 5:30. Which is when the game started halfway through or late in the first period from Maple Leaf Gardens or the Montreal Forum to watch the Maple Leafs or Canadians play. And I fell in love with the business simply because that was our connection to the outside world. We had one TV channel, the CBC, and then we had tons of radio that boomed into through the mountains all over the western United States and Calgary and Edmonton and Vancouver and Kamloops and other cities, and it became the link. It became so vital to what we wanted to do. And early on, I just fell in love with the fact that I could listen to voices from San Francisco and voices from Denver and voices from Seattle and Vancouver. And I was in this small town near the border where you knew almost everybody in town. And so, to me, there was there was a captivation. There was an absolute magic about the broadcast world, particularly radio, at that time. And then, as I grew older, I ended up having my own radio show. By the time I was 13 to the time I graduated high school, every Monday and every Friday to talk about high school sports. And then it was at that time I decided I wanted to get into broadcasting, and my parents were very supportive. They were school teachers. My brothers are school teachers. And in many ways, I've always viewed what I've done as a storyteller, and talking about it is similar to being a teacher. So that's how I got into the business and, you know, moved from a small town. Spent 1 year in Vancouver at the University of British Columbia just to get the feel of what it was like to live in a big city. And then at the age of 18, transferred to Ryerson in Toronto. And the rest, as they say, might be history, or as my wife says, it's kind of anticlimactic. But, you know, that's the way things are.
John, you've been on both sides of the mic. Which one do you prefer?
Naz, you know what? I love both sides. I will tell you right now that the three of you, and if I was getting paid today, I'd say the same thing, as we're stealing money. Being an announcer, being a commentator is much easier, in my opinion, than the arduous work, the setup time, the logistics of creating a television show. And then executing the plan, because you have to be a team leader for 40 to 50 people, and you have to make sure that you can be authoritative yet fair. And there were times that I will admit that I may have been authoritative, but I may not have been fair. So it's a much less nerve-wracking job being a commentator than it is to be a producer.
John, you were the executive producer of Hockey Night in Canada for a number of years. And Hockey Night in Canada, certainly when we were growing up, for the longest time, and probably still today, I would suggest, I'd still make the argument that it still is a cultural institution in this country. I'm sure there were, so you were that responsibility and privilege was bestowed upon you for a significant amount of years, and at a young age as well.
I got really lucky. When I moved to Toronto, Wally, I got into a group of people that were working in sports right away. Became friends, lifelong friends. Became, you know, quite influential people within the industry. So as a teenager, I started to work on Hockey Night in Canada, Wednesdays and Saturdays at Maple Leaf Gardens, $10 a game and a baby blue jacket. And I would tell you that the baby blue jacket was more important than the $10 a game. And it wasn't just a television show. It was a philosophy. It was a way of life. And you learned so much about the industry. You learned so much about how to tell a story. Just by being around, in my mind, some of the best broadcasters that Canada has ever created, and they were kind enough in those early years to me to share their knowledge and share what they knew and how to do it at a time when the television industry was starting to boom, that hockey was starting to grow too. Because remember, so when I started in '76. I think there were 16 teams or 17 teams in the NHL. Obviously, I watched it when there were six. But so by the time the end of the decade, the end of the 70s occurred, and the WHA teams, the four of them joined, I was at the right place at the right time. And that's, in the end, I spent close to 20 years in and around the Hockey Night in Canada world, and view it as some of the most fun I've ever had in the business, the most prolific time I ever had in the business, and really it was part of being the elite of the elite. It was like playing for a championship team for 20 years, because every year Hockey Night in Canada went to the Stanley Cup Final, and we were lucky enough to be around all of it all the time.
Lou, all the years that you've had there, which one probably stands out the most with all the years that you've produced any, whether the Olympics or even the World Cup? And what kind of cast of characters have you met over that time?
Well, there really are two different storylines there, Lou, in that I view what Hockey Night stood for totally different than what the Olympics were. You know, I was, for the longest time, I was a big believer that that winning the Stanley Cup and being part of the Stanley Cup tournament every year was so vitally important, and was my life's dream to do that. And then what happened when the Olympics came along, that changed a little bit because the Olympics were just another different cultural event, not just a sporting event, but a cultural event. So my time at Hockey Night doing the regular season and the Stanley Cup playoffs, I mean, there's a boatload of games that I'm very proud of to be part of. And to be honest, I wasn't, you know, I didn't skate, I didn't play, I didn't shoot the puck, but I was there and I was part of the conduit between the game and the viewers, and that excited me. So when you look back, when Wayne Gretzky scored his 50 goals, the 5 goals that night against Philadelphia, 50 goals in 39 games, I was lucky enough to produce that game in Edmonton at Northlands Coliseum. My first Stanley Cup final at the age of 23 was the first Islander Cup, and I was lucky enough to produce Bob Nystrom's overtime winning goal game, game 6 at the Coliseum. Those were important. I had moved to Alberta to be the Western producer in 1980. I didn't have one team. I had four. I had Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, and Winnipeg. And I wasn't married at the time. Loved getting on airplanes. Loved producing hockey games. And so I was producing 4 or 5 games a week in different cities constantly. So the 1980s to me were the halcyon years of my career. It really created a bed of experience. When you consider that between 1980 and 1990, I produced games where, if it wasn't the Islanders, it was the Oilers, who I produced regularly. It was the Flames that I produced regularly. Or it was the Canucks in 1982 that I produced regularly. So I was going to the Stanley Cup final as the producer a lot, working in those days into May. It wasn't into June. It was into May. And that was, to me, that was the ultimate thrill, to be right in the eye of the hurricane every year. That was a big part. The other one was in doing the Olympics, and sorry to take so long, but in doing the Olympics, lucky enough to be part of what I viewed the best cultural experience of my life was the Winter Games in Lillehammer, Norway in 1994. It was a small-town Olympics. It was like having the Olympics in Huntsville. And it was so much fun, and the Norwegian people were so great. And now, if you're from a hockey perspective, if you remember, that was the team that Tom Rennie coached that went all the way to the gold medal game. And we didn't even expect them to get to the medal round. And so they became a real Cinderella story. In fact, we had to make a deal with the network, is that we only had one channel. It wasn't the case of having 5 or 6 channels, and you watch figure skating over here and downhill skiing over there and hockey on another channel. But we made a deal that there was so much demand to watch figure skating and so much demand to watch hockey that we stuck with hockey, and we made a deal that as soon as the Canadian team lost a game, we would switch and prioritize figure skating. Well, the Canadian team didn't lose until the gold medal game. And it really helped our ratings and made for a great storyline. And if you remember, that was the year of Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding as well. So we had tons of stuff to talk about. And then I was lucky enough to be executive producer of the host broadcaster when the NHL players came to the Olympics in 98 in Japan. I did NBC in Salt Lake in 2002, where the women won on a Thursday and the men won on a Sunday. So to me, from an Olympic perspective, Louis, that the Salt Lake Games And the most emotional I ever got in a TV mobile wasn't the men's game. It was the women's game on the Thursday night where I was the only Canadian working on the crew. And for some reason, the crew of 65 people decided that they would congratulate me for winning the gold medal as the women got their medals and sang "Oh Canada." That was a very emotional moment for me.
Now, you produced Wayne Gretzky's last game. What was that like?
Actually, no, that was 21 years ago yesterday.
Wow.
At Madison Square Garden in New York. It was something to behold. We had put together, and we really hadn't decided to televise the game, I think, until the Tuesday prior. TSN did the Thursday game in Ottawa, his last game in Canada. Gord Cutler was the producer there, a good friend of mine. He did an outstanding job, and Wayne was just a gentleman on the ice, staying out and waving to the people at, I think it was called the Corral Center at that point. But we had his last game, Pittsburgh versus the Rangers at Madison Square Garden on a Sunday afternoon. My favorite story of that was that, and Louis would recall this, the last Saturday of every season, regular season, usually was either Montreal at Toronto or Toronto at Montreal. And we would get ready for the playoffs after that. So I had to call Bob Cole, who was normally calling that last Saturday night of the regular season between the Canadiens and Maple Leafs. And I said, "Bob, I've got some bad news for you. You're not doing the Maple Leafs and the Canadiens at the Bell Center." And Bob almost came through the phone at me. Bob was so angry that he couldn't understand why he couldn't do that last game. I said, "Well, I've decided to let you do Wayne's last game too." Well, that changed the whole perspective of a fun little phone call. And so Bob and Harry obviously did the game from the garden, and Wayne was such a gentleman. How many encores did he do that night? How many sticks did he exchange? The hockey game itself wasn't great, but the spectacle of being at Madison Square Garden, which I view still to this day as probably the greatest arena to watch a sporting event, no question. No one comes close to being at that arena. That to me was a night, an epic night that, in many ways, bookended Gretzky's career so eloquently. And I was lucky enough just to have a little part of it.
We're talking to John Shannon. John, this would be an appropriate time for us to go to our second commercial break. We chatted. You've agreed to stay on, and we'll after we come back from break, we'll take it to the end of the hour with John Shannon. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville introduced contact-free delivery. Order and prepay online and choose contact-free delivery. The driver will place your order on your doorstep in a nice, clear, protective bag. Then he'll politely stand back 2 metres and call the number on the receipt. Once you answer the door, he'll give you a little toodaloo and off he goes. Contact-free delivery from pizzaville.ca or the Pizzaville app.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the number 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
To become a champion in business, it takes coaching, training, and bench strength. And every team needs a skilled player like KPMG Enterprise for private companies. KPMG Enterprise helps entrepreneurs and family businesses grow, strengthen, and transition by offering a full suite of services, including audit, accounting, tax, and advisory. Your business doesn't stand still. It evolves. Team up with a winner. Visit kpmg.ca/enterprise. Let's do this.
The security business is easy, right? Anyone can learn it. Perhaps they can learn it on duty with your valuables at stake. Perhaps they can learn it in a crisis situation that requires an immediate, intelligent response when lives are at risk. After all, what harm can a few mistakes make? Plenty. When it comes to security for your business or office, an experienced partner like Regal Security makes sense. Security is what they do. Peace of mind is what they provide. Visit them online at regalsecurity.ca and find out how much they know, not how much they can learn.
Are you real ready?
If you're a real estate agent, we can help you sell more homes. A business owner? We'll help show it off to the community at large. And if you're a homeowner, we'll supply accurate floor plans for every room in your home. Because selling property is all in the details. Real Tours Media, creators of 3D virtual tours, walkthrough video, HDR photography, logos, and brands. Check out the one-stop shop for successful real estate agents. RealToursMedia.ca.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Opinions expressed on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
You name it, they'll argue about it. No sport left unturned. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning, welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on New AM 740. Joining us this morning, John Shannon. John, are you still with us?
I'm here, Wally.
Great. Naz, Lou, we didn't cut you off, did we?
No, I'm here.
I'm still here.
Everything. We're firing on all cylinders today. Anyways, John, I wanted to get into something. Listen to these names. McCowan, Kiprios, McLean, Shannon, Cherry, Millard, and a whole bunch of soccer guys. Used to be with Sportsnet, no longer with Sportsnet. John, what happened?
Oh, yeah, I think you'd have to ask the people at Rogers.
I mean, and you're a pretty astute guy, John. What's your theory?
Oh, you know what? That's beyond me, Wally. This is a business that doesn't surprise me anymore. There is little logic and very little common sense in our business. And if between politics and budgets, if that's what Rogers wanted to do, then that's Rogers' business.
The fingers are pointed at the fingers. Some fingers have been pointed at the deal that Rogers did with the NHL, the billion-dollar deal. And I've heard some of the comments you've made on that deal. The numbers broken down would lead one to the conclusion that that hasn't panned out the way they had anticipated. But there are other factors involved in that deal that were non-financial, which was the point about being able to dominate NHL broadcasting in Canada. Is that a fair comment?
Well, part of the issue with whatever people think the lack of performance of the Rogers hockey contract, a lot of it can be pointed back to the one thing that Rogers couldn't control, and that was the performance of the hockey team. You know, I mean, when we look back at that, the first year, and remember, gosh, it's a long time ago now, I think it's 6 years ago, where there were five Canadian teams in the playoffs, that was a different world. That was a pretty good time. When you went not too far into the future, when no Canadian team made the playoffs, that changes the whole perspective of the deal. Rogers paid $5.2 billion for a 12-year deal, probably without analyzing where the seven Canadian teams were on their performances, and the ebbs and flows of the game, and probably never even considered the fact that a Canadian team had not won the Stanley Cup since 1993. And you can count the amount of times on one hand since then that a Canadian team went to the Stanley Cup final. From a business perspective, I would have done the same thing. I would have tried to buy all the rights. I would have tried to control. I would have tried to control the market when it comes to hockey in this country. How to execute the plan, that's a different story. And I probably would have done it much differently than they did.
Now, John, is there room for two sports radio stations in Toronto?
How about three, Naz?
No, three.
Let's do a third one.
Who's the third one?
Well, no. Let's make a third one. Why not?
You know what? I make it happen, John. I know there's other people that might be interested in doing that. Make it happen and send us an invitation.
You know, the interesting thing about where radio is right now. And it has something to do with the pandemic. I think that we're learning from a logistics and technical side in broadcasting, not just in radio, that do you need all the infrastructure that radio stations and television stations have always had in order to deliver content to the viewing or listening public? And the answer is, I think a lot of people have found out, is the answer is no. And I think it's something that, for the longest time, the broadcast world has really said, no, we don't want to go there. And the pandemic has forced us to go there. So there's a lot more stuff done remotely. I remember back when Bob McCowan did his show remotely and he was living in Las Vegas, we thought Bob was the outlier. He was different. There's no way that's going to work. Well, in the end, and here we are in 2020, everybody should be doing the show from Vegas or from Kapuskasing or from Etobicoke or from Mississauga. There's no reason. There's no real reason in so many ways now to put people in the same studio, in the same location, in order to communicate. And that's the one. Changing perspective that we're going to see come out of the pandemic is that we're going to see a totally different structure of how our industry is going to perform and going to be executed.
Lou?
I just wanted to bring back some old memories. Wally and I were talking at the start of the show here. Where were you on that night of 1987? I think you were co-producing the game between us, the Washington Capitals, and the New York Islanders, and what did you think of it being so late?
No, I wasn't, because I was doing in the West by then, Lou. So I was that was the famous Kelly Rudy versus Bob Mason night, and Pat LaFontaine scoring the goal, and I think there were a lot of people within the hockey world saying, "Oh, you know what? The Islanders just find ways to do it, particularly against that team, particularly against the Caps." Who were at that point? Louis, I don't have to remind you. They were, the Capitals appeared to be the bridesmaid. Always, had really strong and were improving every year in the regular season. But then faced somebody that they just couldn't beat in the playoffs. Whether it was the Islanders, whether it was the Flyers. To me, I'm not sure you were on the team. I'm sure you were the night that you finally beat the Philadelphia Flyers and Dale Hunter scored on the breakaway.
Yeah, I was there.
Man, to me, that was I loved going. By the way, I loved going to the old arena. I loved going to the Cap Center. It was out in the middle of nowhere, but it was a great atmosphere. It was dark off the ice. The organization was such a great organization to work with, and we had so much fun there. When David Poile was the general manager there, and I knew David from the time we were in Calgary together in the early 80s, and the arena was so far out of town, David would give me his car for the day if I wanted to go anywhere. I mean, I don't know any general manager in the NHL would give me his car now, but David would say, here, take the car. If you need to go out back to the hotel, take it, because there's nothing to do here for the next couple of hours. And I loved going to the Cap Center and working, and I loved I think the passion of the fans in Washington was tremendously underrated in those days. It wasn't a big fan base, but they were really rabid Caps fans. And that team that you played on was one that I really enjoyed being around.
I remember the 98 year, the year that you were talking about, where Dale, we knocked off the Flyers in Game 7 in overtime.
Yeah.
It was the next series that really brings back even more memories, because Shanny was on that team, and that was a bloodbath in Game 7, going through Game 7. And we thought we had him taken, but Pat Verbeek decides to, well, he doesn't decide to, but happens to cut Rod Langway's Achilles,
right,
in Game 1, and he's gone for the whole series.
Yeah.
So we're really battling an uphill battle to stay with them. But I'll tell you, that was one series against New Jersey that, if you talk to Brendan Shanahan, it was a total war, all seven games.
Well, you know what? Those were years, if you recall, and playoffs are different, but those were years where not every game was televised, Louis. And there were lots of great games and lots of great teams in that period of time, the late 80s, the early 90s, particularly in those divisions where Philadelphia and Pittsburgh dominated so much that we never really gave too much respect to people like the Devils and your Caps teams. They were fun to watch, but we didn't get to see them enough, and so we didn't know very much about them. And I'm sure there were times you came back to Toronto for the summer times, and they say, "So what have you been doing?"
John, a couple of weeks ago, we had Don Cherry on the show for the entire hour, actually, and we didn't really chat with him about what happened in November. But and I know it's a really, really difficult conversation. I know Don's a friend of yours, and so is Ron McLean. You weren't on the air, and McCowan wasn't on the air the week after that happened. And that was unfortunate in this sense, there, because I would have loved to have heard. I mean, we've been big fans of primetime sports forever, and we yep. always enjoyed listening to you and listening to Bob, and the round table was a personal favorite of mine. If you had been on the air, have you ever thought about this? If you had been on the air with Bob, how would you have approached it, the discussion?
You know, Wally, that is that's a great question, because I actually... obviously we were all disappointed that last summer we got let go. But that was a week that I was glad I wasn't on the air.
Sure.
Because both Ron and Don are great friends of mine to this day. I have the utmost respect for both of them. We have been through battles with each other and together, and have come out of it better for it. And I would have been a puddle. I would have been a puddle because I wouldn't wanted to criticize one without the other, and I wouldn't have wanted to praise one without the other. It was a very difficult time. It was in fact, I can tell you that week, because it was a Saturday, and then Ron went on the air Sunday and apologized. My phone started ringing on Monday morning at around 8:30, and I turned down 65 radio interviews that week to talk about it, because it wasn't my place. It wasn't my business, and my answer then was, I am not part of the story, and I choose not to be part of the story. Time has changed that a little bit. But at the same time, I can see both sides. I can see all three sides, in fact. I'm disappointed for Don more than anyone, in that I would have liked to have had Don go out the same way that, you know, we were able to treat the greats of our game, whether it be a player like Gretzky, or the way Dick Irvin was treated when he retired. Or the way that Bob Cole got treated recently. I'm not sure Don would have enjoyed it as much, but I think he deserved that. And to have it happen this way is, in my mind, a real shame.
The interesting thing that Don, we didn't delve into it at length with Don. He didn't particularly want to chat about it. We had talked about it in our show back in November and made our viewpoints known then, so we didn't want to. But he interesting comment that came from Don, and it segues into something you've said publicly on some of the shows you've been on. Don said if Ralph Mellenby had been around, he would have figured out a solution to this. And you sort of said, I don't remember your exact words, but
I got to tell you my exact words. It wouldn't have happened.
It wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what you meant by that?
Well, first of all, let's talk about Don's first thought about Ralph, because Ralph, in the end, was the godfather of Hockey Night in Canada. In the 70s, when I started, he was the one who brought Don to the show in the early 80s. And Ralph treated the Hockey Night clan like a hockey team. And the hockey team in those days, lesser now, but in those days was, what happens in the room stays in the room. And we'll fight this together, and I may not agree with you in the room, but once we get outside the room, I'm on your side, and we're all in this together. And that was the legacy that Ralph created for all of us, and I truly believe those of us that worked for Ralph learned that from him. And to this day, I think that loyalty factor is a big part of what made Hockey Night so special. And I'd like to think anywhere I've worked is that loyalty is a big part of why we become successful. So that's the Ralph side. Ralph would have found a way to work around it.
When I say
that it wouldn't have happened is that I believe that the structure of the show when Don and Ron were doing it in November was such that it was, there wasn't much editorial assistance made from production. And there were days that when I was there running the show that we would discuss what was going on and what was going to be said. And if there were touchy issues and touchy topics and subjects, we would talk it through on how it would be said. And in the end, it was something that we were happy with as a group, not just one person. And Don would always tell you he wasn't much of a team player, he understood more than anybody what Hockey Night in Canada stood for.
Forgive me, Naz, and forgive me, Lou. We've only got, as I'm sure you've heard this phrase a zillion times, John, time is our enemy. We've only got 2 minutes left, and we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the franchise, Bob McCowan. You spent a lot of time with him. He sort of created a whole genre. You spent a lot of time with Bob McCowan. Your thoughts on Bob?
Well, I will say it this way, and I'll be brief, is that I have had the great fortune of working with, in my mind, the three greatest sports broadcasters in our country, Dave Hodge, Ron McLean, and Bob McCowan. And I would go to war with any of them at any point because they know what they want to do. They do it at the best of their ability, and they make it entertaining for the listener or for the viewer.
Naz?
Yeah. Bob McCowan was something. What made him click, John? What was the thing that made him click?
He had the ability to listen to anything and ask a question that was pertinent to what he was told. He was the best listener, is the best listener I've ever been around. He had the ability to incorporate a new question that would basically tell the interview subject, hey, I heard you, now we're going to move on, and it would captivate the person on the other end of the phone or in the studio that would make Bob made that person feel very, very special.
We've been talking to John Shannon. John, as usual, I've only got through about half of what we wanted to ask you. Your career is way too extensive to boil it down in an hour. Hopefully we can do this again. We very much appreciate it. The 10 o'clock ticker is about to hit us. John, I'll leave it off at this. Thank you very much for joining us. We hope to hear you on some station, on some roundtable, in the very near future in the greater Toronto area. Thanks so much for joining
us. Maybe the third radio station.
The third radio station. It started here this Sunday morning on Zoomer Radio. John,
good to hear you.
So
even you, Lou.
Thanks, John. It's my pleasure.
Thanks, guys. I'll take it over from here. Thanks, John. Lou, thanks for joining us. Naz, I always give you the last word. I'll give you the last word. Thank everybody you need to thank.
Stay safe.
All the best. To all our listeners, have a great week. And as Naz says, please stay safe. We'll be back next Sunday morning. Thank you.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.